Hello, lovely listener. Welcome to Words in Progress, an ongoing conversation between two people who write for a living and for pleasure. Every week, we meet up to chat about what we've learned and share our top tips. But first, let us introduce ourselves. I'm Robert Mills, founder of Fourth Wall Content.
And I'm Christine Cawthorn, and I run a company called Cruxstar. We're currently working together on a website project where I'm working as the content strategist and Rob's doing the content design. In this series, we'll talk through the challenges that crop up and how we get through them.
Hello, friends far and wide. We've reached episode 9 of the Words in Progress podcast. I'm Rob Mills, and as per the previous 8 episodes, I am joined by content pro, keeper of cats, well, cat singular, and the wonderful human being that is Christine Cawthorn. Hello to you.
Oh, hello, Rob. What a gorgeous, gorgeous intro, as always. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Episode 9.
Episode 9. I can't believe we've made it this far.
I know.
We've shared many stories of cats, cakes.
Raisins.
Content. Yes, we did do the raisins.
I don't want to talk about the raisins.
I'm a fan, you're not a fan.
Let's move on from the raisins.
What's the food that you like but I don't like?
I don't know. What don't you like? And I can tell you if I like it. Maybe that's
That's good. I don't like octopus.
I don't either.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good for our friendship, but not much. I'll keep thinking of food that I don't like. I mean, there's not much.
If you think of anything, just drop it into the chat. And
okay.
So we're at episode 9. We've had another busy week. What have you been doing since we last chatted?
Yeah, it has been busy. So we're coming to the end of the project as we know it, and there are lots of loose ends to tie up. And we've also been thinking quite a lot about what we leave the organization with after we've finished our project. I've been thinking about two things mainly this week. One has been recording some training sessions or offering some training sessions to help build a library of sort of best practice for the organization. In terms of both best practice for content, but also how we do things at this organization. So what are the decisions that we've made along the way that we can share with other stakeholders, other subject matter experts, other content people across the organization? So we've been putting together a little curriculum. So things like introduction to plain English, things like how does our workflow work? Obviously, that will change over time, but how does the proposition, what's it made of? How does it affect your content decisions? So that's one of the things that I've been thinking of. And I was going to do them live. I was going to chat to you about this separately, but now we're recording. I might as well do it here. I was thinking of doing those live as a sort of a webinar type situation. But I'm off on holiday soon, and I'm worried that I won't get time to do them, or I'll end up doing them at ad hoc times. And I didn't really want to do that. So I had been thinking of doing recording me talking in front of some slides. And part of me is thinking that that's a good way to get the thing recorded and get it done. But part of me also thinks that that's incredibly naff.
I think that it's a good idea because then they've got that to refer to. And you so you're building up that library and it can be shared with people across the org. You could always do follow-up sessions with Q&As and things, or you know, other ways to gather feedback, or with any gaps in what you covered, there wouldn't be an expert.
There'd be gaps in me telling you terrible puns, long rambly stories about things that I did that morning, something about the cat, food that I don't like.
People need that stuff. There's something nice about live sessions because it feels a bit more engaged and you're involving people and there's time for questions there. And then as they think of things, you know, it's, I guess with videos, it's putting the onus on people to then, right, I need to get in touch with a question or for this thing. But again, you can make that easier for people when you're back with following up and by recording them, there's that sort of that library to refer back to.
That's a tricky one. There's no perfect way. Maybe if I could have an avatar, a cartoon version of me, then I also then don't have to look at myself doing the training. That's always a bit cringe. So
it's a shame that we can't like blur ourselves instead of blurring our backgrounds, isn't it? Lovely background, just a blurry face in the middle in training.
Have some lovely books on a shelf, a couple of bits of art, maybe the cat walking in and out, and then just, me blurred out in the foreground. So that's one of the things that I've been thinking about. And then related is setting up a community of practice for content people. So we've got our content strategy that we're working on that we're going to hand over. And we've been amending or refining some of the processes that the content people go through and spreading the word about user-centered content through the organization. Obviously, that work isn't finished, but one of the ways that we can help the organization to continue learning from each other and to talk about content is to help them set up a community of practice. So normally that looks like anyone who's working in content, they meet regularly and they talk about the work that they're doing. So they do maybe a show and tell to each other, or they look at a process that they've been working on, or maybe someone says, I've been developing a pattern for this type of situation. I want to show you all so that we can get some consistency. So connecting those people that don't necessarily work in the same team, but they have the same job or they have some of the same responsibilities in their job. So I've been thinking about doing that and what that looks like here. So that's what I've been up to. But tell us about you, because you've been busy. I haven't seen you as much as usual.
Yeah, we're not avoiding you. I've been busy. But I just want to say on your community of practice bit that you just shared, though, I love how inclusive that is, because there's been a lot of enthusiasm across the organization to be involved and to see change. And that gives a real nice structure and long-term plan for that, I think. So I'm really excited to see how that pans out in the coming weeks and beyond.
I think when I've seen it at other places, the times when it works nicely and is successful and builds momentum is when people really like the idea and a couple of people really adopt it as something that they're interested in and they genuinely want to learn from others or to share what they're doing. So hopefully we will have enough interested people that it becomes something that is valuable to them. It's not just, crikey, it's another meeting in my calendar at lunchtime when I'd rather be out eating, I was going to say beef burgers. I don't know why I thought that. I was trying to think of something that I didn't like as a joke, but genuinely, I've only thought of one food so far. No one's eating octopus burgers.
No, but I wonder if you were going to say burgers, because before we started recording, you told me how you had burgers for lunch yesterday. Do you know what I said?
I've been shamed.
And don't get me started on the fact that you had pizza for dinner on the same day.
Had double carb lunch and dinner. It's outrageous, isn't it?
No, I'm jealous. It's absolutely the best.
It was great, but I did have to do some exercise today to offset it. I mean, I didn't do enough.
It's warm. It's still muggy. It's still close. It's
fine. Yeah, I should have double saladed, but I didn't. Saladed.
I wouldn't mind I mentioned your dietary choices.
No, not at all. I will often, as the nights draw in, I will often double carb in the same meal. So like pasta with a garlic bread. I mean, it's outrageous.
It's inspiring.
Or a beige. Don't have it often, but occasionally I'll go for a beige tea, which might be like toast, omelette and potatoes or something. You know, just all beige everything.
Serve me up that beige platter any day of the week.
Yeah, just offset the salad that you might have had at lunch and just go all in on the fried goods.
I have no idea how to link this to what I've been doing this week, which is your original question.
You've served up some more content.
Oh, hey. Yes, I've been busy doing pair writing and not really trio writing as we defined and talked about in the previous episode, but I have been having meetings with two others to collaborate on the bilingual content. So that's been really great to kind of take those processes and put them into practice and I guess test them through doing, really. And they're both working well. So I'm pair writing with a content designer who's employed by the organization that we're working with. And I am then trio writing or collaborating with the same content designer and the translator. And that's been really great in terms of the outcomes for both languages of the content, both versions of the content, but also kind of links back to some of the things you've been talking about in terms of hand off and hand over and stepping back from the project as we near, I guess, an end, really. And so bringing the content designer into the conversations and the process with the translator so that then the two of them can kind of take that forward as the organization thinks about bilingual content design across the wider organization and long term.
I think what I've seen from outside of that sort of mini group that you're in is that initially you started, well, we started those processes with an idea. Is it going to work? Is it not? Whereabouts in the overall process will this go? And I've seen you three kind of work that out together. So you've not just done it once, you've done it a few times now, and it's been adopted as the way that we do bilingual content, we do it together. And so that's been really good to see. And they're making tweaks, they're kind of pushing it forward now rather than you coming in from the outside and saying, right, let's do it like this. It's more like they're saying, all right, and yep, we've booked in the next trio writing session, and yep, we're going to bring that forward so that we can make it, changes to the English version. So it's so successful. It's done that thing where it's got a life of its own now. Other people are talking about it. It's happened. You tried to make it happen and it did happen. It's happened. It's happening.
It's happening. Happening right now, probably. They're probably pairing right now. Doing amazing stuff.
Everywhere. Writing content together everywhere.
Yeah, it's been great to see that process just stick. And I think the kind of those collaborative conversations where we're looking at the English and the Welsh together, those conversations have become quicker. And I think that's because of the process working. And even every single session I've had with a translator, we have made changes to the English based on insights from focusing on the Welsh content. So it still continues to serve improvements to both versions of the content. And it's not just, we need to get a Welsh version of the content at the end of this process. And so for me and the other content designer, that's been brilliant, because inevitably you always end up at some point being too close to the content. And we've reached that point. And so the translator is coming in with fresh eyes, fresh perspectives, some subject expertise, and obviously the ability to think in both languages. And that's just been invaluable. And the translator, again, in every single session we've had, has said at some point, this is just brilliant. Working in this way is brilliant. And this is somebody who had never done pair writing. And so it's been refreshing for them to be involved and be given the time to think about the content a bit more widely in terms of user needs, business goals, and I guess in relation to content design principles. The translator is, to some degree, content design in the Welsh version.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. It gives them so much more control. I don't know if that's the right word, but so much more input into the user experience, instead of it just being an additional, separate, discrete step at the end. Like you say, they're having an input into the English content and the content as it is as a whole, rather than just, okay, your remit is very small and we're uninterested in it. In fact, they're having much more back and forth.
Yeah, it's been very collaborative, continues to be insightful and productive and useful. And I'm just really pleased that as we step back, that process will continue to happen, and hopefully will happen more widely as kind of capacity allows for, and as the community of practice kind of beds into the organization. So I'm really optimistic that this way of thinking about bilingual content and the processes to support that thinking will be in place and continue long after we've moved on to projects new.
Actually, you've just made me think we should make sure that the translation team is involved in the community of practice.
Yes, absolutely. Because I think of all the points of the workflow, I feel like translation is the one that could very easily just slip back to being the way that it was and come in right at the end. And that's the other thing, I suppose, just talking about that process and what happens when we're stepping back, leads into, I guess, the other stuff that we've been focused on this week together, really. And that's exactly that, trying to think about what we leave the organization with and what has to be in place, and how can we provide things that will continue to support them when the project team are no longer around. And so part of that has been documenting decisions.
Yes. So you have raised something very interesting here that we've seen over the last couple of weeks. So a few weeks ago, we talked about, we'd mapped the content creation workflow, and then we'd shown different people in the organization, had feedback, and then we'd asked people to essentially start following that refined or that tweaked process. So there were a few mumbles and grumbles as to whether that was going to work, but fair play to people involved. They said, yeah, okay, let's give this a go. And it hasn't quite worked as seamlessly as it might, as in it hasn't quite worked as seamlessly as it might have looked on paper. So there's definitely some opportunities to refine it. So the particular sticking point is around, it's not necessarily who owns the content, but it's who starts the content. So whose responsibility is it to start creating the content? Who owns the information? Who understands the processes that we're trying to describe? And so in the before times, it would be the subject matter expert that owns that information, and they start the content and they send it to content designers. We had tried to move it towards being a little bit more joint. So we own it together. So subject matter experts own the information, but content designers own the user experience, how users see that information, see that content on the site. There's still a sticking point around who starts it though. And I think the subject matter experts still want to start that content because they know what they want to say or they know the process. And the way that we've done the last few bits of content is that we, the content designers, have started them just because we're in control of our project and we're saying, okay, this bit of content needs doing next. So there's a little bit of back and forth around inaccuracies and parts of the process that are missing, other organizations that are involved. So it's leading to a bit of frustration. So I think that's been quite interesting to see, because we're able to test this process that we've created and see where it needs refining. You can't tell when you write something down whether it's going to work or not. It's a process. It's an organic thing, even though you can't see it. We're all involved in it. So I quite like seeing what happens when people follow a process and all of the messiness and the actual real life troubles start happening. So that's been something that we've been puzzling over. How can we refine that and make it better?
There's always changes needed when something moves from sort of theory to practice, isn't there, as you say? And I'm just glad that we got to the stage that we did make that step from theory to practice and learning through doing. Because we're asking people to change how they work. And so much of this comes back to clear roles and remits. And not everybody's going to necessarily be happy with their new roles or the new remits or the changes. And so then it's the case of, well, trying to, I guess, show them the outcome from the content. And it's just, with projects like this, there's regular stages of convincing and engaging, but for different reasons. And we're one of the much later stages now of convincing and engaging. But as you say, everybody's been willing to try. And that felt like the biggest hurdle was overcome. Collectively, we can refine the processes as needed. We can respond to concerns about roles and remits and ownership. And I've seen that, like, that all comes from a good place, isn't it? People care about the content and they want to be involved. And that's really good. And it's not always seen in organizations. And I'm also seeing that sort of thirst in other areas now. And one example that springs to mind because of a workshop we had earlier today actually was around archiving content. And there's a real enthusiasm in the organization to be archiving content. And again, that's a breath of fresh air in some ways, because there's so much focus on publishing and there's always less focus on unpublishing or archiving or deleting, whatever we want to call it. And so I feel really encouraged by that enthusiasm as well, that they really, you can see that the organization and all those people involved are thinking beyond the content that we've been creating in the last few weeks. And right, what else do we need to be thinking about? What other content do we have? And what's the impact? And what are the risks? And what can we get rid of? And they're actually, they've provided a big list of stuff to get rid of or to certainly discuss archiving. And so that's been great. And thinking about, right, what process do we now need for that part of the content lifecycle? It's all coming together nicely.
Yeah. And isn't it funny? Because the middle few weeks of any project or the middle few months are a bit of a busy, messy time, and you get lost all the time, and you know too much and you don't know enough and you're overwhelmed and you're too close to it, and then you're not far enough away. That's the same thing. You're not far enough away. I don't know, some words. That happens to you. And then you start to come towards the end of the project and you start to finish off bits of work, or you start to have different types of conversations with people where you're saying, right, okay, well, after we've gone, this will be your responsibility. And sometimes, often that changes it for people. They suddenly become much more invested, or they suddenly realize they see a little bit more perhaps than they did before. They suddenly realize, when we publish something, we will have at some point to unpublish it. We will have to see this through to the end, see all these thoughts through. You start to be able to finish those conversations. And I think for a long time, you're just starting conversations with people and you're not necessarily providing answers. You're often just asking more questions about the questions that you get. So yeah, it feels quite nice to come to the period and you're saying, right, okay, that's a great question. How do you think you're going to solve it here? Here's what they do at other places. And often by then they're confident enough to say, right, okay, well, I think the way it could work here is, yeah, rather than just help. I've never done this before. I don't have a clue. We've managed to have a go at a few different things with people. We've managed to get them to work in a slightly different way. We've also managed to show, I think, that when you change a process and it isn't necessarily right, you can tweak it. You can make more changes. So it's not that you swap one thing that isn't working for another thing that isn't working. You swap it for something else. You learn a bit. Okay, how can we put that learning into practice? How can we make a decision that's based on what we know rather than just 12 people coming to a room and they've each got an idea of what the solution is and they're not willing to listen to others. It's very difficult to get people to try one thing. And once you get them to try that one thing, it's easier then to get them to try something else and something else and something else.
We've definitely learned a lot in the last few weeks with that process through gathering feedback. And I think for a little while, I in particular was in a little bubble of content creation and pair item with a content designer. And then you sort of open the gate and invite others in. And they're excited to be invited to the party, but they've got strong opinions and which are all valid. And it's just, you end up then receiving a lot of information and then needing to kind of filter or push back or provide rationale. There's been so much happening around the content in the last few weeks, which is, I guess, a growing pain of what we've been trying to achieve in order to be able to step back with confidence. But the upshot of that is like seeing the confidence in others really grow and seeing things work and seeing people try.
I always think it takes a lot of energy to do a project like this. Because you said it really well earlier when you said there are lots of different stages where you have to do some convincing. Mm-hmm. I could really picture that. And so, yeah, you need energy at the beginning. You need a lot of energy at the middle. And then towards the end, you need to refresh. People kind of get a second wind, don't they, as they see the end approaching. I mean, obviously, it's actually the beginning because once we leave, they start learning all over again. A bit like when you learn to drive, and you learn to drive to be able to pass your test. And once you've passed your test, then you have to learn to drive all over again without anyone else in the car. And it's that kind of idea of, oh, right, okay, I know the rules now, or I know enough to be able to do this. And that takes a whole new set of motivations and energy. But yeah, towards this closing period, you've got people starting also to look back and say, oh yeah, okay, I understand why you said that there, or oh yeah, we should have done this then, oh yeah, but we weren't ready, or we didn't have that in place. So there's often a kind of, oh right, okay, I see, it all makes sense, this order in which you've done things. And particularly the content strategy, you can sort of start anywhere, I think. I mean, it's nice to start with a proposition because it's something that aligns everybody, but you could start with a workflow. You could start with a part, one of the processes. You don't necessarily have to start at the beginning and finish at the end. It just kind of depends on the flavor of the organization and the people that you're working with.
It really does. I mean, given that we've been so busy the last few weeks, have we learned a lot?
Such a good segue.
I just noted the time and I was like, oh, need to get to the next segment.
Yes, I think we have learned some stuff this week. I think the thing that I learned, which is some of the stuff that I've been talking about, but is about the processes. Until people do the processes, you don't know that it will be successful. You won't know that it's worked. So when you're doing the content strategy and you're going to leave, don't deliver the strategy at the end in a document and then go, okay, you got your strategy, bye. Try and start some of those processes off as you're still there, given your time constraints, but then you'll be able to help them refine bits that don't work. It won't be perfect as you write it out, even though you'll think everything, you've addressed everything. It's only until you make that theory real that you can see whether it's going to be successful or not. So don't wait for perfection, just get going. I think that's really been brought home to me over the last week. How about you? What have you learned?
I guess it's similar to you in that I've covered it in some of the last things that we were talking about, really, in terms of learning when to step back, at what point to sort of step back and hand over and bring in people into the processes so that they can then take them forwards when you're gone. And that's been, it's very hard to know when to do that and allowing enough time to hand over. But I think we've done it at the right time. And for me, a lot of that has been influenced by the people I've been working with. So when somebody's saying to you, this process is brilliant, I wish like I could work like this all the time. Right, that's working. When you see somebody's confidence grow in being able to say no to things, for example, or just generally when someone's confidence grows, then I think that's a nice point to consider, right? Okay, sort of taking more of a back seat. And so just learning about the circumstances that might be hinting at it being the right time to focus on handover and thinking about the final like weeks or however long's left on the project and what that looks like for everybody involved. And then I mentioned earlier about opening the gates and letting people in and everybody having opinions and wanting to get involved. And so really, as with a lot of the stuff in the episodes we've done before, it's sort of like a relearning, sort of being reminded about the importance of listening. So actually giving people enough time to share those opinions and thoughts and concerns and ask their questions. Because I think in the sort of work that we do, we are privy to lots of information from lots of different sources. So subject experts, stakeholders and colleagues, sometimes people outside the organization. And we have to filter and prioritize that information. And then we have to act on it or not. And if we don't act on it, we have to be able to provide rationale for why we're saying no or not yet or yes, but. And a lot that's been happening a lot in the last few weeks as we've reached, I guess, quite critical stages of the project. And so, yeah, just sort of relearning or reminding, being reminded of the importance of listening and then I suppose what to do with all that information that you've heard and how to process that and disseminate it, etc.
This sort of work is very much personalized to the people that we're working with, to the organization that we're in, to the team that we're with, or even the people in the team at the time. When I said earlier, it takes a lot of energy. I think part of it is just simply that we're trying to tailor what we're doing to the readiness or the feeling in the team at the time, the stage of motivation. Sometimes a team gets tired and they just need a break. And sometimes the team is stagnating a bit and we need to just group together and get some energy back. And what you're saying there is very much the crux of why it takes so much energy and why it can often take some of your personal reserves is that you're looking at these people that you're working with and saying, are you ready? Do you want to take ownership of this process? Am I getting in your way? Do you need more support from me? It's very personalized. It's very one-to-one. It's very intensive. And I think that's great because you're helping people in their careers, but it's also very, very difficult to do, particularly if you've got other stuff going on or it's August and you're waiting to go on holiday. So yeah, great learnings. And I believe it's your turn to do a top tip. You're always full of top tips, as we know. But I think this week, I reckon you've got an extra one for us.
Oof. Well, I've been in this hot weather, I've been full of tip tops. Which is true. Love a tip top. Gotta keep cool. But in terms of top tips, I think just stay open in the sense of, yes, have your own opinions, have your own processes and recommendations, but really staying open to the opinions and the processes and the recommendations and the feedback and the questions from all of the people involved in the project, because no two projects are the same. And we learn just as much as we're trying to teach others. You know, it's a two-way thing. And so just keeping an open mind and making yourself available to people and being willing to listen. And I mean, really listen, not just like, Yeah, I'm listening. I've listened. Tick that box. Really like listening to what people are saying, because often what they're saying is valuable and useful and can influence and change things for the better in terms of processes or whatever else. So yeah, stay open, be available.
Yeah, I like what you say there about we learn as much as we teach. That's a really nice sentiment.
Tell you what's not great. Next episode is our last episode of this season.
Of this season. Wait, will there be another season, Rob?
Dun, dun, dun.
Maybe.
It will, right? Yeah.
So next podcast episode will be the last one of this season. So we will be doing a look back kind of retro type exercise over this whole project. But don't worry, we won't be away for long. We are thinking already about season two, which we believe will be about personal writing projects, so creative writing. So keep your ears peeled for that one.
I can't wait. That means I have to do some personal creative writing. I've got lots of things that I've started in draft that I might be able to talk about. Maybe season two will be the inspiration to get some of those things over the line.
I think it will be the appointment with your audience that will encourage you to set aside time every week for your writing.
Which means there's actually lots to talk about in that season, if that's what we cover, again, around process and habits.
Oh, yeah.
Productivity, procrastination.
I could fill a whole season with my procrastination, for sure.
Season three.
Could try and write you a little poem for every week.
Nice.
I've also thought of another food that I don't like.
Oh, go on.
Snails.
Also don't like. I was meant to like it, right? That was the thing. Is that how we started? You don't like it and I like it because you like raisins and I don't.
Yeah.
Well, if you do think of more foods you don't like, you can tweet me, DM me on Instagram, WhatsApp me, email me, Zoom me, Teams me.
Slack you.
Slack me. I will be waiting.
I'll email you. Okay, fantastic. Well, as ever, another insightful, wonderful hour with you. And I look forward to seeing you soon for our last episode where we look back over this whole project and all of our best bits.
Right back at you. Can't wait.
Bye.
Hey, just a bit of a plug here for the Cruxstyle content community that Rob and I run. It's a free-to-join space for all you lovely people working in content. The community brings people together to share tips, solve problems and chat things through, so no more struggling on your own through tough challenges and lonely afternoons. If you sign up, you'll get our newsletter, invites to our monthly events, plus access to our Slack group where we ask and answer each other's questions, have a bit of a laugh and obviously share pictures of our pets. It's a lovely supportive space and we'd love to see you in there. Want to join? Of course you do. The sign-up form is on cruxstyle.com/community. And of course, if you join, you'll also get access to all the recordings of our past events. We recently had a panel on helping you get a job in content. We had a plain English expert, and we've also had a session on translation. So there's something for everyone. See you there soon.